Thank you very much, and welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Andy of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. We've got a great show in for you this afternoon. Part of the cast of the upcoming production of Tommy, put on by the Department of Theater and Dance here at the University of California, Davis. Part of that cast will be here in the studio to talk about this remarkable production, to tell you about the music, the actors, and the psychedelic pinball wizardry. And then, in the second half of the program, I'll be joined by Carol Roth. Carol Roth is the author of a brand new book that I have here in my hand. It's called The Entrepreneur Equation, Evaluating the Realities, Risks, and Rewards of Having Your Own Business. Carol Roth is the author of this book. She's helped many businesses grow and has raised herself over $1 billion in capital. She's a frequent radio, television, and print media contributor on the topics of business and entrepreneurship and has appeared on MSNBC, WGN-TV in Chicago, among many others. She is the host and author of CarolRoth.com. That and some remarkable Afro-Cuban jazz. Just the sort of thing that you've come to expect when you tune in on a Wednesday afternoon at 5 for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Stick around.
This hour of KDVS programming is brought to you by Doctors Clinic for Men in Sacramento. Doctors Clinic for Men assists those unable to perform sexually to their own or partner's satisfaction. Treatments are offered which can resolve both premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. Doctors Clinic for Men's medication consists of only FDA-approved agents. and its staff has over 15 years' experience in this area of medicine. Confidential visits are conducted at the California Sutter Building, 28th and J Streets in Sacramento. The office can be reached at 916-551-1595 or toll-free at 877-493-8839. On the web at www.doctorsclinicformen.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Thanks very much for tuning into your local campus and community radio station. Well, springtime means a great number of theatrical productions available to use for you to see here on the campus of the University of California, Davis. And we've got another opening this coming weekend, in fact, starting tomorrow. The Department of Theater and Dance is putting on The Who's Tommy, directed by Granada artist-in-residence Mindy Cooper, who's here in the studio, with music and lyrics by Pete Townsend. The hit musical, winner of 5 Tony Awards, is based on The Who's 1969 double album rock opera Tommy. It's the famous show that revolves around young English Tommy, who becomes deaf, dumb, and blind after witnessing a murder as a boy. He later rises to fame as a pinball wizard, as I also did in the 1970s, though without so much trauma. I have Mindy Cooper here in the studio along with some of her cast and supporting players. But first, let's welcome Mindy. Mindy Cooper, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming by. So, for folks who don't know about the Granada Artist in Residence program, could you say a couple things about that, which I think brought you here, and then something about the experience of putting together Tommy?
The Granada Artist Program is sort of a jewel in the crown, I think, of the dance theater department here at UC Davis. It brings in a semester or quarter? What do you have? New quarters.
Mm-hmm.
It brings in every quarter a working professional from the from the theater or dance world to direct or create a work. And in many ways, I think it's a great addition to the full-time faculty because it's somebody from the real professional world working now. Gives students a chance to make connections. Gives students a chance to get a taste of what it's like to sort of work with new directors that aren't, won't handhold things like that. So this is my third time as a Granada artist in residence, and I do enjoy it tremendously. Now, it being the third time, I have more of a handle on what to expect of the talent pool and technical aspects. So I know how to sort of attack doing a musical here now.
That's great. Long-time listeners of this show or people who follow the local music scene might remember that you also did a production of Oklahoma at the Mondavi Center and also of You're in Town, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
And so how were the preparations different for this particular production of Tommy compared to your last couple experiences working with actors here at UC Davis?
The other experiences were what I would call more improvisational than mm-hmm. than these rehearsals for Tommy. Because Tommy is sung through and it's all music, there's maybe about a page and a half of dialogue, which is very, very rare for a musical. we had to spend a week just learning the music. You can't approach this piece without knowing the music first. We did a lot of dramaturgical work because, as I liked to say, there's not a lot of there.
Right.
The piece written by Pete Townsend in the early 60s, he was about 22 when he started to write this, and it was rather cathartic for him. And it's a not... it's not an intricate story, so there's not a lot to chew on. So I instead had us mire the piece very much in the period from 1940 to 1963, very real for the time and the eras that it spans, and mired it in British post-war. And so we did a lot of the dramaturgical work so that people could have something to hang their characters on, because they needed that. And so that was a huge jumping off place for us.
And the character of Tommy himself, I understand, is played by, is it three different actors?
Yes, it is written for 4-year-old Tommy, who witnesses the murder, 10-year-old Tommy, and then narrator Tommy, who we see him from 18 to 20. And the conceit is kind of beautiful, in that narrator Tommy is sort of the spiritual guide for the younger Tommies, to sort of say to them, it might be bad now, but you'll get through it. It's really quite uplifting and beautiful.
That's great. Now, your 10-year-old Tommy, I know from the front page of yesterday's Enterprise, is a boy named Benjamin, who lives here in the city of Davis. Mm-hmm. I know his mom. Mm-hmm. And I've seen him at poetry events. I've seen him at Farmer's Market. I've seen him with much longer hair than he seems to have in your production. Uh-huh. So can you say something about plucking a talented young man from the school system here in the city of Davis and bringing him on stage for a PG-13 production?
I will first say I'm a lucky, lucky girl to have found Benjamin.
Yeah.
It is very rare in a kid that young to have the focus and the sort of mental prowess that he has, and the dedication also. I had created a piece for my friend Laura Downs at the Mondavi, using a lot of kids, and he was one of them. And I knew that the end of the year, this was on my docket, and I was like, Benjamin. Something special there. And Matt Donovan, who plays narrator Tommy, was working with me on that, and I sort of stood them next to each other and went, yes, the bone structure will work. He's an amazing kid, and it's been really wonderful to have him and his sort of 12, because he's 12, his 12-year-old insights, and it's been really wonderful. And I curse less when the kids are in rehearsal.
Right. Excellent. But yeah, he's a 12-year-old with insights, and that's relatively rare, I guess I'd say.
One of the things that the press department had, there were some videos being made of the making of this rehearsal process, and one of the assistants was going around saying to everybody, how do you think he does it? Because that's that famous line.
Right.
And everybody in the cast was answering, I don't know, because that's the answer. And she asked Benjamin, and he told her how Tommy does it.
Right.
Like, all right, Benjamin.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we return, we're going to hear from some more of the cast of this production of Tommy. Before we leave that, Mindy, let's remind folks about how they can get tickets when the show starts, which I believe is tomorrow evening. Should I point the mic at someone else for this information?
It does start tomorrow night. They can get tickets on the website.
I bet at MondaviArts.com.
Oh, yeah.
And probably at the Mondavi Center box office.
Uh-huh. Or main... No, you can't get a ticket at Main Stage. I'm lying.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So head over to the Mondavi Center, and it opens on Thursday, and it runs through this weekend.
No, it runs next weekend, too.
And then next weekend,
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Two shows on Sunday?
One. Damn.
Okay. Just checking. Sorry, we've got no 12-year-olds here. You're safe. Just the ones listening at home. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. We'll be right back to learn more about Tommy. Thank you.
The Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019 or via email at root@lugod.org.
Ali Sundstrom is here in the studio, ladies and gentlemen. In this upcoming production of Tommy, she plays Mrs. Walker, Tommy's mother. And then I've got a long paragraph that talks about what it was to play this character, but less information about you, Ali. So I'll just welcome you back to the program and talk to you about Mrs. Walker. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. So, we learned that Tommy himself has this traumatic event when he's 4 years old. And we know that Mrs. Walker has a hard time of it herself sometimes. And so I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about this character and the and what you did to prepare to play it on stage.
Well, Mrs. Walker, it's not just Mrs. Walker in the show, but what makes the show different is that you see, you know, these characters through a really large span of time. Especially Mrs. Walker starts off at 17 and then ends the show at 40. So it's a lot different trying to prepare to play this whole range of ages instead of just trying to prepare to play, you know, a brief space in a person's life.
Right.
So, I mean, like Mindy said, we did a lot of dramaturgical work that was really helpful. And I've done a lot of shows, coincidentally, that were set in the 40s, so that was, I knew a lot about that, but I had to do a lot of more research about, okay, well, how does that evolve from the 40s and to the 50s and the 60s? And, I mean, there's a huge movement, you know, in the roles women play, you know. I mean, Mrs. Walker starts working off in the war factories, and that's how she meets her husband, but then, you know, there's the whole shift of, you know, housewives in the 50s and then the movement into the 60s. So I definitely had to look into all of that and take that into account when looking at her character.
Excellent. And the music, you have to do a lot of singing, just like everyone else in this show. And tell me about that preparation. Were you ready? Did you know the songs already before you started work on this show?
Well, my dad's a big Who fan, so I've grown up knowing the Who music since I was, like, 8 years old.
Right.
So I knew them in, you know, listening to the rock album, but I'd never listened to the Broadway cast before. So I think it was daunting for me doing this show because it's so much different than all the other musicals I've done. I've done one other rock musical, but nothing that was this intense. So, I mean, I think it, like Mindy said, I mean, it's just a lot of time and preparation at the beginning and front-loading that music. Since there is no dialogue, you have to know all the music first before you can take any other steps forward.
Excellent. And we talked about Benjamin before. Have you worked with child actors, at least at a time when you were not yourself a child actor? And how did that work out?
I have worked with child actors before in a few other productions, back in my hometown at community theaters and in other places, but nobody, like, we have been blessed. Benjamin and the girl, Riley, who's playing our four-year-old Benjamin, or Tommy, they are so focused. We have been truly blessed that we got the two of them because they're great to work with. I think they're more focused than some of the adult actors in the cast. They're always on top of it, and they know exactly what's happening and where they need to be, and it's really been awesome getting to work with them.
That's great. And in terms of things that you haven't already mentioned, what would be a compelling reason for someone listening to come see this show when it opens tomorrow?
I think one reason that I would tell people to come see the show is because no matter if you've seen a musical before, this is going to be different than anything you've ever seen. And even people who have heard the Who's music or even seen the movie of Tommy, it's different than everything else. We strove to make it our own and to make it our own production. And it's different than a musical. It's different than a rock concert. It's really like nothing else that's out there.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Let's hear from another cast member. Back here joining me for at least the second time is Matthew Donovan. He's one of the three actors playing Tommy. We last talked to him when he was here also playing a part that you got to share with someone of a different age, and that was in Come Hell and High Water, directed by Granada artist-in-residence Dominique Sarand. And here you are playing the title role of Tommy. Matt Donovan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I don't want to give anything away, but deaf, dumb, and blind, was that challenging?
You know,
yeah.
I mean, we were talking about, when I was talking to Mindy about, like, how do you even prepare for something like this? I think that was the thing we tried to figure out is he deaf, dumb, and blind? And we, after doing a little bit of research, we kind of thought maybe he wasn't necessarily deaf, dumb, and blind. It was just the fact that people at that time in that era, they didn't know what it was, so they just assumed he was deaf, dumb, and blind. Because the way that I guess we're kind of approaching it is that he just processes it all very differently, and he's in this like catatonic state. Yes, there's some psychological something, damage of some kind, but he's still cognizant of what's happening around him. It's just he can't like communicate exactly. So
we were talking about the trauma before of what he witnessed, but from what Mindy was saying, you're kind of a guiding spirit to younger versions of yourself. It's kind of an ironic reversal in some ways of the last character you played, where there was an older version of yourself that was much wiser.
Right.
And it was you who was making the not always wise decisions.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if you could reflect on that. And what was it like to prepare to be this kind of almost like a Jiminy Cricket sort of conscious, where you're trying to guide this young character through decisions that he was making?
Right. Well, I think for me, what kind of clicked was we were in a rehearsal, and it was the opening. It was Amazing Journey, one of the songs in the show, and it's in the beginning. And he, this is just, you know, the lover has just been killed, and he and little Tom, 4-year old Tommy, goes into this state. And narrator Tommy walks out and sings the song. And I think it was kind of like me just thinking about who I am now, thinking about talking to myself at 4 years old. And it's like, if you know now what you know now, just trying to talk to yourself, I think that's kind of the approach I took to it.
So. Makes sense. We talked about your research into Forrest Gump when deciding your last accent. And I'm wondering, this idea of a British accent, you know, some people say that they could understand the Beatles when they sang, but not when they spoke.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you did any accent work for this production?
Yeah, actually the whole cast did. We're really fortunate to have, well, Bella Merlin is one of the professors on campus here, and she had another guy come in, and they were both British.
Right.
And we had British night, and it was fun, and we learned a lot. I didn't know that the more north you go, the more it's up kind of in the nose, and then the more south you go, it's a little bit, you know, down in the back of the throat.
Right.
So it was really interesting. Like, a lot of things I didn't really know, and just I didn't understand that Australian accents were British accents because, yeah, all the history behind all that. It was really interesting. So, yeah, we've all been speaking in British accents to each other around. We've been trying to. It's funny because you don't realize that you slip into your little American accent.
Right.
During rehearsals, so.
Yeah, when I lived in Britain, I kept trying to slip into a British accent, and nobody really believed me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's funny because I remember going on YouTube and, like, finding all these British people that are trying to do American accents, and they do them actually fairly well.
Right.
You couldn't tell, but it's for some reason it's the Americans who just can't get it.
Yeah. Right. One thing that Bella does, I don't know if you've seen her do this, that when she's playing an American, she lowers her IQ about 40 points.
Yeah. I know, right?
And then you say, oh, that does sound like an American.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she's quite good at that.
Yeah.
All right, good. Well, Matt, this sounds like a really fun show, and I look forward to seeing you in it. Ladies and gentlemen at home, we're going to take a quick musical break, and then when we return, we will hear just a little bit more about Tommy. It opens tomorrow evening, runs through the weekend, and then can be seen all next weekend as well. For more information, you can visit the Department of Theater and Dance at theateranddance.ucdavis.edu. If that's too difficult, then use a search engine. We will be right back with more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy with an important message. Wood Rogers Consulting Engineers is proud to join the Community Blood Drive, and they remind us that the need for a safe and secure blood supply is now with us. If healthy and qualified, do your part and donate blood. You protect not only yourself, but the community as well. Remember, the greatest gift you can give is the gift of life. This important message is a courtesy of Wood Rogers Consulting Engineers in Sacramento. You may visit them online at woodrogers.com. They care about the health of this community. Chris McCoy is here in the studio, and he's our final representative of Tommy, the UC Davis Department of Theater and Dance production that opens tomorrow night, the 19th, and then runs through this weekend and next. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. So tell me about your role, your function with this production of Tommy that opens tomorrow night.
Well, I play Captain Walker, who, of course, is Tommy's father. But during the extended prologue of the show, I get shipped off to war and become a prisoner of war. So I'm not actually around for the first 4 years of Tommy's life. And that's when Mrs. Walker thinks that I've died. Then I magically come back, which sets the rest of the story in motion.
Excellent. And I'll ask you the question I was asking Allie before. Were you familiar with this show or with this music before you got a chance to participate in it?
Actually, I was. I'm a little bit older than the other cast members. I'm actually a PhD student here.
Uh-huh.
So I had seen the Broadway tour when it came out. I was in high school, so I had seen it in my hometown of Kansas City and fell in love with the show then. So then I did research and went back, oh wait, this was also a movie and an album from before. So I actually knew the Broadway version better than the original cast album.
Excellent. What was it about the UC Davis program that drew you, and where did it draw you from?
Well, I had just finished my master's at Emerson College in Boston, and I was very lucky to be accepted at a number of different programs. I knew that performance studies is the way of the future, and I'm much more interested in looking at performance studies rather than just historiography or literature, or drama as literature. And so when I came here, I did my master's thesis on the protest dramaturgy of the gay rights movement. And so I knew identity politics was going to be part of it. Well, in my first year, I looked back at my interests, and I've always been training and working professionally in musical theater. So I thought, well, why don't I put these two together? And we've got this really great program that focuses on practices research.
Absolutely.
So that was a big draw. Was to be with other working professionals. You know, we have a lot of performance artists and poets and musicians who come mostly from the Bay Area. And so I really like the program for that reason.
Great. Now, in terms of this particular show, do you have a favorite song? And do you get to sing part of that song? Or does someone else get to sing it?
Yeah, I think Pinball Wizard is probably my favorite song.
Yeah.
I jam out backstage to that one. it's a great number. And surprisingly, actually, Allie's number of Smash the Mirror has become one of my favorites. Once we got it up with the band, you realize what a rockin' song it is. And it's also a pivotal moment in the show.
That's great. And say something about the music. As you said, the band. Is it live performed music?
Absolutely, yep.
What
band
a treat.
The band is on stage with us on a higher platform. And it's led by Graham Sobelman, who's been our music director all along, who's fantastic. He's in the Sacramento area. And so it's a number of local musicians, and they definitely rock.
Do you play an instrument as well?
I don't.
And have you been inspired to take one up by this show, Tommy?
I'm going to finish my PhD first, and then we'll find out.
First things first.
I'm a little busy, yeah.
Excellent. I bet you are. All right. Well, Chris McCoy, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you.
And before we finish this segment, I just want to go back to Mindy Cooper. And Mindy, any discoveries or reflections on what some of your cast have been talking about over the last 25 minutes?
Oh, I don't think we had any epiphanies. Mm-hmm. We love to sit around and talk about this show because we're very, very passionate about it. It's a hybrid. It's its own version of where a rock opera and a musical come together, and I think it's very ripe for university level. It's ripe for this community of Davis. Everybody I meet in town's like, I love that music.
Right.
And it's rarely done because it's such a monolith of a show.
Right.
And so it's a rare and wonderful opportunity to hear this music played live, sung, the narrative explained to you, and it's been a joy that the set designer Courtney Lampedecchio and I have had a great time creating this place, which is, I'm not going to give it away, but it's pretty much the most high tech that this theater has ever gone.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful, because really what you're talking about is that people will really get their money's worth, because you get not only the high tech and the narrative and then the monolithic qualities that you're speaking of, but also the rock and the opera and the musical.
Mm-hmm.
So people who like to cross genres, mm-hmm. who like entertainment that crosses media, this will certainly appeal to them.
Absolutely. It's also a musical with a beautiful message as well. It's very uplifting. It's very ripe for the times. And
excellent.
Yeah.
And songs that you can sing to yourself as you walk out of the theater.
Or to your loved ones.
Absolutely.
My 7-year-old daughter sings the entire score now. Not always appropriate, but that's
right.
Okay. Yeah.
Sure. And speaking of which, PG-13, I remember reading somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So so bring your teenagers, mm-hmm. and bring a date if you're so inclined. It's Tommy, and it opens tomorrow night. Have we talked about the setting? The theater?
It's at Main Stage in Wright Hall.
Right.
Uh-huh. Right there on campus.
Exactly. And so if you're so inclined, you could just follow the crowds right over to Wright Hall, mm-hmm. After perhaps parking over by First and A, and then just walk west. You'll run into it.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks to all four of you for coming on the show, and I look forward to seeing the big production.
Thank you for having us.
Sure, take care.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and we'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM, Davis. Regular listeners know that I've taught classes recently for the Graduate School of Management and have been really interested in the ways that technology has opened new avenues of creativity and innovation for entrepreneurs. Well, someone who knows much more about that than I do is Carol Roth, and she is on the live line. She's written a brand new book called The Entrepreneur Equation, evaluating the realities, risks, and rewards of having your own business. Carol Roth holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, where she graduated magna cum laude. She currently resides in the Chicagoland area with her husband, Kurt, who is also an investment banker, and her former business partner. This book is filled with really creative and necessary advice for any small business person, and therefore, I'm very pleased to introduce her to all of you. Carol Roth, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Dr. Andy, well, thank you very much for having me and for that fantastic introduction.
Absolutely. Well, this is a wonderful book. I've really enjoyed reading it. Tell me what prompted it. I know that you've done work at carolroth.com with your unsolicited business advice blog and column. And I'm wondering if this book grew out of that or if there are other motivations and needs.
You know, it's really funny. Most of the things that I do in life come out of being frustrated or pissed off about something, Dr. Andy.
All right.
So this one was no different, and I've been advising businesses in various capacities for over 16 years. And as I talked to entrepreneurs and small business owners, and I kept seeing the same issues pop up over and over again, I started taking a look at the information and the resources that were out there, and I was just kind of horrified at some of the advice that certain entrepreneurs or people in the business space were putting out into the market, and there really wasn't enough emphasis, in my opinion, on preparation.
Right.
And really making sure that you've done your homework, you've stacked the odds in your favor, and that you're going into entrepreneurship with the rose-colored glasses off. And so that's been my tone. I'm very much known as the tough love person. I'll tell you if I think you're being foolish, but I'll give you a hug afterwards.
Right.
But this book really just came out of me writing down my thoughts and going, what is wrong? What's going on here? And then I went, oh, boy, this is a lot of words. Probably doesn't fit in a blog post anymore. We should probably put this in the form of the book. So sort of like everything else, came from being frustrated and then also did it backwards because most people write their books the other way. They write the book proposal, and then somebody accepts it, and then they go off and write the book, and I did that exactly backwards.
And so after writing your book, you said, you know, this could really work, and you got some interested parties to take it on. Well, on this particular radio show, because we talk so much about technology as a example or conduit of creativity and innovation, we've had some heady discussions about the great number of opportunities that are available to people who want to become entrepreneurs.
Yes.
But I know that one of the things that that you focus on is the extent to which any of us is a good fit for the sort of work ethic and focus and other concerns that are necessary if an entrepreneur is going to be successful. I'm wondering if you could say a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation because technology has lowered the barrier to entry and made it very easy for anybody to start a business. And I think that that's a little bit scary because you get all of these people who are jumping into entrepreneurship who are not prepared, who don't have their finances in order, who maybe aren't even pursuing opportunities that make sense for them vis-a-vis their goals,
right.
and really just haven't done enough homework, and like you said, in some cases may not even be compatible with entrepreneurship at all. So for some people, it's a fit issue, and for some people, it's a timing issue. And because you have all these people out there chattering and saying it's easier than ever to start a business, totally agree, but it's harder than ever to be successful in a business because it's easier than ever to start a business.
Right.
So I think it's a double-edged sword, just like everything else. sometimes the biggest strength is also the biggest weakness. And when you open it up and make it so easy to start, I think it's very tempting for people to jump in even less prepared than they have been. And we know the statistics weren't real good beforehand on the success rate. So it just sort of opens it up and creates that extra level of temptation. So I think that you have to use the conduit appropriately and still make sure that you have crossed your T's, dotted your I's, and done everything possible to stack the odds in your favor, because it's just more difficult than ever to reach customers. You have more tools that you need to be up to speed on. They're changing really rapidly. And just because you have enough money to start that business doesn't mean you have enough money to sustain it or to live on in the meantime. So a lot of questions come up that are really enhanced by all the technology and developments that we have going out there.
Now, do you find, and let me just remind folks who are just joining in, Carol Roth is my guest, and she's written a new book called The Entrepreneur Equation, which we're talking about. Do you find, what do you see as the difference between what people imagine their lives as entrepreneurs will be like and what the reality is? Realities that they may not, as you suggested before, may not have researched as thoroughly as they needed to.
Yeah, I think that I have a little visual analogy that I like to say. I call it business beer goggling. So it's people who are so intoxicated by the business idea that it kind of looks a lot better to them than perhaps it is in reality.
Right.
So I think it's this intoxicated state. And the other one that I draw sometimes, Dr. Andy, is the folks who plan for a marriage, and they spend all the time on the wedding and the honeymoon, and then they figure it's going to be happily ever after. And I think the same thing happens in business, where people really spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about the idea and getting ready to launch, and not thinking what it means after you get it launched. That you don't have a ribbon cutting ceremony, there's no confetti that falls from the sky, and there aren't 75 million people who are lined up around the block waiting for you to open this business. And I think that's where the disconnect is, that so much emphasis is put on the idea and the upfront, and not enough is put on the happily ever after, which is really where the difficult work comes to play, and frankly, is really where successful businesses are made, because it's not about ideas anymore. It's really about execution. And certainly, you know, every once in a while, there is a blow-away technology, but most of the time, it's really about executing something a little bit better, a little bit smarter, a little bit faster. I mean, even companies like Google. I mean, Google was not the first browser that was out there. They waited for other people to innovate in that category, and then they came in and they did it better and they did it faster. So it's not just about the idea. It's really about the execution. And I don't think enough emphasis is really put on that, because it's not really the glamorous or sexy part of it. Everyone wants to talk about the remarkable sexiness, and that's not what actually makes the successful businesses, unfortunately.
So what sort of, for people listening at home who want to get a sneak preview of your book, The Entrepreneur Equation, what sort of questions should they be asking themselves? They may have an ingenious idea. They may have some financial backers. Maybe they put some money away so that they don't need to live immediately off of the proceeds of a brand new business. What sort of things would you suggest that they keep in mind as they continue that planning?
Well, first of all, if they've done all of those things and they're far ahead of the pack, and I give them a giant high five, because I don't think that most people are even in that state, the book is really broken up into four sections. It's looking at your motivation. You know, why are you going into business in the first place? What is your objective, and what is the success going to mean for you? Because at the end of the day, we all have different definitions of what success is, and we all have different goals, and we all have different circumstances in our lives. So you have to figure out what that means for you in order to be able to evaluate it and make sure you're really going into business for the right reasons, that there's a customer need there that you're going to service, and that you're not just hopping on the hot bandwagon and hoping that you won't be the one holding the hot potato at the end of the day.
Right.
So really need to focus on that motivation. Then you have to take a look at the timing, because like you said, if they have their finances in order, that's fantastic. But most people don't. Most people don't have enough money to be able to start the business, operate it for a couple of years while it gets its foundation, and also live on in the meantime. There's an assumption that's often made that they're going to be able to start pulling money out of the business right away, when it takes a business a while to get going. I just wrote a piece about Oprah's new network. Everyone's giving her slack about, oh, you know, it's been 4 months, and look, Owen is struggling. Well, that shouldn't surprise anyone. It's only 4 months old.
Right.
And even if you have Oprah, it's still a new business, and it's still going to go through some ups and downs. So if it's a struggle for Oprah Winfrey, pretty sure it's going to be a struggle for you. Always a possibility that it's not, but you know, I wouldn't be a betting person on possibilities. We like to go on probabilities. So
well,
you want?
I was just going to say, I was on Oprah's TV show about 19 years ago, and when I look back at that videotape and compare it to, you know, the show today, my wife is also a Chicagoan, so she's a loyal Oprah viewer over the years. I could see that she was making mistakes way back then. That it was a little kind of clumsy, some of the things that she was doing. That obviously, it's taken her years to become the successful entrepreneur and self-made billionaire that she is. And that, you know, even Oprah wasn't Oprah right at the start.
Exactly. And now that she's in this new venture with Own, you know, it's a new thing that she's going into, and it still needs to settle itself out. So you have to have that mindset that this is going to take a while, and do the things like getting your finances in order to be able to do this, and also getting some experience. I find it very interesting how many people want to go into an industry that they're really not that familiar with, and expecting to, you know, kind of hit the ground running. And there's so many opportunities to learn on somebody else's dime, or to test something out on a small scale before you take the leap. So really putting in the preparation to make sure that if you do take this leap, whether you're getting financial backers or the money's coming out of your pocket, or more likely a combination of both, that you're really investing in something that, A, you're still going to enjoy down the road, that you're good at, and that you've really spent time understanding, so that you don't have that hurdle to climb in addition to the execution that you have to do on a day-to-day basis. And then on the back half of the book, we look at the opportunity, making sure that it's big enough to justify all of the risks that you're taking on, because far too many people in our country make really bad risk and reward trade-offs. And then just looking at your personality to make sure that you're not that person who's going into American Idol who cannot carry a tune. I love these people. I love the people. They go in, they can't carry a tune, they come back out, and what does their family tell them? Their family says, you are great, the judges don't know anything, when all of America just heard that they were tone deaf.
Right.
And I would really just love one of these family members to go, you know what? You love to sing, so sing in the shower, sing in your car, sing all day long, but you're not going to earn a living from it, and that's okay. And I think if they did that, these people could move on with their lives instead of clinging to the dream that, hey, this is the way I'm going to earn a living. And I think the same thing in entrepreneurship. There's just some people who don't want to take on risk, who really focus on the details. They need to be told what to do, and they're great at doing it once somebody tells them. And if that's you, that's good. That's an important function. If we didn't have those people, we wouldn't have businesses. But if that's you, you shouldn't be running your own business. And whether or not you have the right mindset or the right finances, if you're not the right person, then don't, you know, try and put a square peg into a round hole.
I remember you saying in the book, The Entrepreneur Equation, that this is the most competitive time ever.
Yes.
And I think that the American Idol analogy is a good one, that there are so many people that come before those judges, and only a certain number of them are going to survive to the next week's show. And I guess that analogy might hold true for a lot of the entrepreneurs in this country as well.
It absolutely does. And part of the issue is that all the bad competition just makes it that much harder, because if you think about customers and kind of this social media culture that we're in, and we're so used to, you know, making decisions really quickly and getting information really fast, there are so many messages coming at us that we tend to ignore most of them. So now you've got all these people blabbing and spamming and putting out information, and even if you have something that's just awesome, sometimes it's still hard to get the person's attention, and it takes several times, which means you have to have that couple-year runway, and you have to have the financing to just keep pounding it, because even if you have the best thing since sliced bread, if nobody knows about it, then it's really, really difficult to have a business. And so the good competition is tough, but the bad competition is tough as well, and it just makes it, again, with technology, easier for, you know, some of the clowns out there to start businesses, and that doesn't help any of us in the process.
Absolutely. Well, Carol Roth, it's been a pleasure to put a voice with the face, and your face is on the cover of the Entrepreneur Equation, evaluating the realities, risks, and rewards of having your own business. If people want to find out more about you and your work, they can also visit you at carolroth.com, and that's Carol with a C.
Yes.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour today.
Dr. Andy, thanks so much for having me, and hope we can chat again soon.
I hope so, too. Take care now.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, folks, it's now time for a little bit of music, a public service announcement, and then some concluding thoughts here on KDVS 90.3 FM, Davis. Pleased to say that none other than Josh Fernandez will be the featured poet at tomorrow's edition of the Poetry Night Reading Series. It takes place at the John Itzulis Gallery. You might have heard Josh a week ago Monday talking about his work on Insight on Capital Public Radio with Jeffrey Callison, or you might have seen the long article about him and his poetry. For Josh is a Davis High grad and a UC Davis grad. He was on the front page of yesterday's Davis Enterprise. If you want to find out more about that, you can visit poetryindavis.com or go to josh-fernandez.com. Josh Fernandez will be reading his poetry tomorrow night at 8, along with Lauren Stinkins. Lauren Stinkins is the author of a new book called Sub-American. And both these folks are long-time mainstays of the Sacramento poetry scene. Josh is also a past columnist and arts editor for the Sacramento News and Review. He writes for a number of journals. He was my student way back in 2003. In fall of that year, I taught a class called Beat Generation in Performance, and we actually put on a show at the end of it, a play that I co-wrote called Ephemera that Josh was part of. Well, now he's back at the John Itzulis Gallery. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, he'll be giving a poetry reading with Lauren Stinkins. For more information, visit poetryindavis.com. I'd also like to let you know an important message from Maida Subaru. How about some music, Maestro? Thank you. Maida Subaru reminds listeners that breast cancer is now the number one cause of death for women between the ages of 15 and 54. And it doesn't have to be. Early diagnosis can mean that you'll have an excellent chance of becoming a survivor. So don't delay. Get tested today. This important message is brought to you by Maida Subaru at 2410 Auburn Boulevard in Sacramento. More information about Maida Subaru is at 916-486-8000 or you can visit them on the web at madeasubaru.com. They care about the health of the women in this community. Speaking of taking care of the health of people in this area, let's hear once again a message from our sponsor, the Sacramento Doctors Clinic for Men.
This hour of KDVS programming is brought to you by Doctors Clinic for Men in Sacramento. Doctors Clinic for Men assists those unable to perform sexually to their own or partner's satisfaction. Treatments are offered which can resolve both premature ejaculation and erectile dysfunction. Doctors Clinic for Men's medication consists of only FDA-approved agents, and its staff has over 15 years' experience in this area of medicine. Confidential visits are conducted at the California Sutter Building, 28th and J Streets in Sacramento. The office can be reached at 916-551-1595 or toll-free at 877-493-8839. On the web at www.doctorsclinicformen.com.
Well, folks, we are at the end of this particular program. I'd like to thank Mindy Cooper and the members of the cast of Tommy who were here, Allie, Matt, and Chris. All very charismatic, dynamic performers. I look forward to seeing this production of Tommy. It opens tomorrow evening. I'd also like to thank Carol Roth, author of The Entrepreneur Equation. You can tell from the way she speaks that she is media savvy. Her book is very substantive, and you may want to check that out. And I'd like to remind you that tomorrow night is Poetry Night at the John Atsoulis Gallery. Josh Fernandez and Lawrence Dinkins will be reading. More details at poetryindavis.com. KDBS has some great music for you coming up, so make sure that you stick around for that. I always enjoy it as on my drive home. I'll be biking home, so if you see a flash of maroon on 3rd Street in about 4 minutes, then you'll know that it was the host of this radio show. My name is Dr. Andy, and this has been Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. See you next week.